Assalamu alaikum, everyone, and welcome back to Vortex of Truth. My name is Nima Travoli, and I am delighted to have you join me on this Friday afternoon. Very often, it's really easy to make a split-second decision about a topic, especially when those are sensitive topics, without looking deeper and trying to put yourself in the position of the person being judged. It's sometimes unnecessary to do this in cases where right and wrong are outlined clearly. On the other hand, there are countless situations where a bit of empathy could change a lot. Vortex of Truth is an attempt to evoke that empathy in our listeners. Today's sketch will be exploring addictions, looking particularly at smoking addictions. Addiction is a huge part of our societies, whether that may be the addiction that we're used to, which is to drugs and other illegal substances, or the newer addictions that are popping up like food addiction, sugar addiction, and social media addiction. As the conversation about addiction opens up, we begin to see research and papers written about addictive personalities and the fact that many people may be entirely unaware of their own addiction because what they are addicted to is not socially ostracized. The smoking addiction is not one of these. Smoking has become less and less acceptable worldwide as we begin to realize the dangers not only to smokers themselves, but also to those around them who are forced to deal with second and third hand smoke, especially children. Smokers are also seen poorly in the workplace as there is a stereotype, which is sometimes very accurate, that smokers get to take many more breaks to enjoy their addiction than others who don't smoke. In general, smoking is considered dangerous and even stupid, which is ridiculously different to the stereotype that smoking started out with, which was that it is manly and attractive. So, why do people still smoke to this day? Perhaps for the same reasons that people overeat, do drugs, or indulge in any one of the other countless behaviors that we logically know is bad for us, but still wish to indulge in. Because we're human, and sometimes our basic desires get the best of us. We're not going to tackle the conversation about the permissibility of smoking today, because I am not an arima, and there are so many differences of opinion that to address them all would require an entire program on its own. We are also not going to debate the fact that smoking is harmful, and that second and third hand smoke are true phenomena. There's more than enough research to show that being in the presence of a smoker while they are smoking can cause serious damage on a long-term basis. It should be non-negotiable that while it is a smoker's choice that what they expose their own body to, they have no right to force others to deal with the consequences of that exposure and should limit smoking to well-ventilated areas that aren't shared with others. What we are going to tackle, however, is the biggest punishment that can come with smoking, cancer. There is a huge correlation between smoking and lung cancer, and that particular cancer, which is not unique to smokers, is now seen as a form of just desserts. By choosing to smoke, the individual has brought the situation onto themselves, is what we think. And perhaps so. But then, daily, we do stupid things that have consequences, and I doubt you would want to hear from those you're surrounded by that you deserve everything you're getting, regardless of whether or not you do deserve those things. Consequences and punishment can be quite enough to bring the reality home to a person who's done a stupid thing, without society adding in their two cents. This is especially true with addiction, because addiction is not as simple as choosing to stop doing the stupid thing once. It's choosing to stop doing the stupid thing, and which is incredibly alluring, at every moment until that addiction has been beat, which, as individuals who struggle with alcoholism or even smoking addiction have admitted in the past, can take decades. It is difficult to muster up the courage and determination to wage that kind of fight. And when such a fight has been made necessary for your continued survival, that can be incredibly daunting. Before we go into our sketch, I'm going to read you all a definition of addiction, which comes from a Mental News Today article. Addiction is a psychological and physical inability to stop consuming a chemical, drug, activity, or substance, even though it is causing psychological and physical harm. Please keep that in mind as you listen to the rest of today's episode. Today's sketch is called Suffocation. It's not a drug. They sell it in supermarkets. Drugs don't get sold in supermarkets. They get sold in alleys and under tables. It's just stress relief. He's been saying some form of that particular excuse to his mother for years. Stubborn as he is, she's never been able to convince him to quit. He's too contrary for that. She's never stopped trying, though. She is his mother. He got his pig-headedness, what in her has always been called determination and conviction, from her. When he was younger, his family would tease his mother, insisting that she transferred her own strength pool to him alongside the nutrients her body fed him. They'd never stop butting heads over it. She refused to let him in her home if he smelled smoke. I tossed away thousands of rands in the forms of packs of cigarettes that she went searching for in his bedroom. And then later, once he'd moved out in his car and even in the pockets of his clothing when she was particularly cross. One day, you'll thank me, she always maintained. His darling mother would be insufferable now. Her worst fears had become a reality, and she could blame no one but the obstinate son of hers who refused to mind her and quit his lethal habit. As he stood on the balcony of his apartment, flicking his lighter on and off, he wondered what would happen if he said nothing. He'd been warned that he would need to quit his only hobby in life, and he'd nodded agreeably at his suspicious doctor, pretending to give his attention to the warnings and advice that had poured from the older man's mouth. It was a silly thought. Of course he'd tell his family. He'd need their support. If the words felt false, even as they rang in his own head, he ignored it. The screaming had been atrocious. Perhaps there had been a better way to announce his sickness to his family than to slip it into the fast-paced conversation that always took place when his large family gathered as his mother required once a month. He'd thought it would attract less attention that way. After all, 20-odd people, not even counting the children, made a great deal of noise. Instead, he'd succeeded in making the entire room go quiet for a moment and then erupt into noise. He was almost certain his ears had been damaged by the din, but he had bigger problems than a little temporary deafness. They thought he wasn't taking things seriously, his family. Thought they needed to start managing him, like they had all his life until he'd forced them back. Maybe it was because he was the youngest. Maybe it was just because he'd always gotten himself into scrapes. But he'd never quite managed to shake off the role of child for that of an adult. He was a grown man by anyone's way of measuring, and yet he had multiple people separately demanding his doctor's information so that they could call and discuss his treatment plans. Then, well, he'd lost his temper, and yelling to make himself heard had irritated his throat. Once he'd started coughing, it had been entirely hopeless to even attempt to keep making his point. He'd relinquished control to the mob, and his brothers had carted him off to his childhood bedroom as though he had the flu and needed to be tucked into bed. The walls he'd spent so many years defacing were exactly the same as he'd left them. His mother hadn't touched any of her child's spaces, not even now that most of them had produced a grandchild or two and certainly wouldn't be moving back into these rooms. Her children's rooms, these were, and her children's rooms, they'd stay. He'd smoked for the very first time in this room, he remembered all of a sudden. A cousin, he couldn't even remember which one, had been boasting, and he'd been wide-eyed and curious, ever eager to try new things, especially once his older brothers gave in and did it themselves. The habit hadn't stuck for any of them, brothers or cousin, but he'd liked it. Liked it enough that now, all these years later, he was reaping the rewards. 14 was perhaps young to start and keep a habit that infuriated your parents, but start and keep it he had somehow. After a few years, he'd been mostly left to do as he pleased by everyone but his infuriated mother. She'd never let it go. She never would, he knew. It wasn't in her. His fingers itched and he closed them into a fist, rubbing hard at the back of his hand. He needed to leave. He turned his phone to silent and tossed it in a drawer as soon as he got home, entirely unprepared to deal with the calls and messages that had started coming in not an hour after he'd left his parents' house. His mother's doing, he knew. She'd always believed in parenting as a community, which to her meant calling all her many friends and distant family members and complaining to them about her son's many transgressions so that they could scold him for her once she'd exhausted her voice. He'd been surprised that she hadn't spoken to him at all, after that first tirade that was. But it had made things easier. He'd gotten to leave relatively quietly and relax in his home, not hers. Thank God for a Sunday. He knew he'd have to face up to everyone and everything come Monday. He couldn't hide away like a hermit forever. He'd be ready then, more ready at least than he was now. Do you have any questions? He'd been asked. Did he have any questions. A dozen. A thousand. Most of them just eternal versions of the one particular question that he'd been ignoring this entire time. Why is this happening to me? He knew smokers. He'd been a smoker for half his life. He'd seen lung cancer and smokers' teeth and every other sign that a man or woman was sickening. They'd been old, all of them. He couldn't pretend that he'd ever thought of himself in their faces. He was barely 30. He didn't ask this question that had been swirling around in his mind ever since the first time he'd realized what his doctor was getting at. That his difficulty breathing wasn't due to some kind of anxiety or panic disorder, but because there was something physically wrong. Something that therapy wouldn't fix. Lung cancer was manlier than panic attacks, wasn't it? Lung cancer was deadlier than anxiety attacks, too. He didn't ask the question because he knew the answer. This is happening to you because of you. And maybe they were right, the many people who thought and said that behind his back. Or so they thought. Maybe he did deserve what he'd gotten. Dying was the price to pay for what he'd done. It said so right on the label. He'd done it anyway. Why? Not even he knew. Not really. He wasn't stupid. He could put two and two together and come up with four, just like any other normal human being. But hearing that he was going to die was terrifying, even so. It was different to know that it was coming one day, and to know it in his bones before his doctor even said the words with that maddeningly pitying look on his face. "Should have known better, kid," that face said. "Common sense." It's sad, but what do you expect? That was what people thought. The hypocrites. They had their own vices. Sugar, gambling, laziness. He picked the one that was hard to hide, though. The one that killed, sure and fast. Because of that, he deserved what he got. It filled him with a desire to walk right up to the gossiping old woman who tisked and preached about him and demand to know how their diabetes and gout was any different to what he'd done to himself, but that it was slower. He was a stereotype now, a warning pointed at and held up by mothers wanting to scare their children straight. His own mother spent half her life alternating between scolding him and clinging to his neck as she cried over his impending death. His family was ashamed of him. His friends tiptoed around him, as though scared that the mere mention of his sickness would cause him to keel over dead in front of them. He made people uncomfortable. He didn't blame them. He made himself uncomfortable. It had been months since he'd looked in the mirror, and longer still since he'd bothered to take any care with his appearance. He was dying. It was fitting that he'd decay on the outside to show it. He didn't want to die. He wanted a miracle, despite knowing full well that he didn't deserve it in the least. He didn't want to die. He'd only barely lived. Praying to live felt absurd, though. If this was punishment, then what would praying against it do? It's not a drug. They sell it in the supermarkets. Drugs don't get sold in supermarkets. They get sold in alleys and under tables. It's just stress relief. He'd been insistent over that. He'd never done drugs. He was just a smoker. It seemed there was no difference. A smoker went into a grave just the same as a man hooked on cocaine or heroin. He'd thought himself above them not so long ago. Perhaps that was why the people who came to cluck and crow at his bedside thought themselves above him. He didn't want to die. He was going to die. At least he wouldn't be turned to ash. He couldn't have borne that particular fate. No, he'd be laid in the ground and covered over like the thousands of cigarette butts he'd tossed that found their way into the ground and were covered over by sulks. He was already suffocating. So why was that thought so horrifying? The life he clung to was barely life at all. And yet letting go was even scarier. He'd been unaccountably jealous, pathetic though it was, when he'd last been in the hospital. Not for any kind of treatment, but to perform one of society's rituals. He'd taken his mother to visit one of her friend's young sons, who was there because he'd smacked his car into one of his friends. They, everyone in the room, had fussed and worried over the kid. How was this young man different to him? He didn't know. But the way people behaved was different. He was getting angrier. He knew that. His fingers itched constantly to hold a cigarette. If the end was coming, why not meet it at least a little satisfied? But no. He tossed the very last cigarette that first day he'd been told what was wrong with him. It was a matter of pride to continue staying away. Pointless pride. He'd been too late to save himself anything. But it was all he had. I have an addiction, he thought to himself deliberately, and it is going to kill me. Then he closed his eyes. So, quite a heavy sketch that was. Today, we tackle the story of a man in his prime who's been indulging in a particular vice for a very long time now. Smoking is the addiction that he hasn't been able to beat, and as the sketch goes on, we and he realize that this addiction is going to instead beat him. This one is quite hopeless. And yes, we must acknowledge that it is entirely his own fault that he's in this particular miserable situation. He's got no one else to blame but himself, and perhaps the tobacco industry for making his vice so easily and readily available. He cannot even really blame peer pressure, because young as he was when he began, no one coerced or forced him into beginning on this particular path. Should we really have much sympathy for this particular man? I think so. As we touched on in the sketch and earlier in the program, people do have vices. That is part of being human. Whether your own vice may be a dangerous drug or instead something that seems harmless, like food or social media, we are all victim to our own wants and desires at some point or another. And while the strength that it takes to resist and overcome must be admired, we cannot pretend that we are any better than those who stumble. We don't know how much harder it may be for them in particular to resist. I mentioned addictive personalities very briefly earlier, and I wanted to elaborate now. There's a hypothesis amongst researchers that there may be a particular set of personality traits that make a person more susceptible to developing addictions. This is not a set-in-stone theory, of course, and addictive personalities are not a get-out-of-jail-free card for addicts. However, if we begin to grasp that there may be certain qualities that make one less or more likely to fixate and become addicted, then perhaps the recurring thought process that, I didn't let myself get addicted, so how could you, can become less popular, and we can instead begin to think with more compassion. Different people struggle in different ways, and different people are given different tests. This absolutely does not mean that we should not feel sympathy and compassion for addicts. It is very easy to feel disdain when addicts are destroying their own lives, but it may be entirely possible that you yourself are addicted to something less destructive. And in that case, it is entirely possible that you or I escaped from such fates as overdosing or dying of incredibly painful diseases only because we fixated on something else. The addictions that I'm referring to now are called behavioral addictions, and they can be many. As I mentioned earlier, video games or social media, or you could even be addicted to shopping. Addictive behavior is anything destructive that you continue to do despite its consequences because it feels good. And I think that we all can think of something that we particularly do to indulge in that kind of behavior. This was a quite short sketch because I would very much like to do a second sketch in the next segment of this program. And I would like to do that because it was Human Rights Day yesterday, which I think all of you must know. And the following sketch will be about slavery, which is something that still does exist in our world and possibly even in our particular country. There are millions of people who are either struggling with indentured servitude or outright slavery today, whether that may be sexual or just due to manual labor or all sorts of different things, and I really do think that we need to talk about that as we celebrate the fact that we currently have access to such a beautiful set of human rights due to South Africa's legislation. We are going to take a break in a few minutes, and we will be back for the last segment. I hope that you have enjoyed the program so far. Again, today's first sketch was about smoking and addiction, and the point that we were trying to make with that is that yes, smokers and other addicts smokers and other addicts do have responsibility for their own actions, but also that we should not certify them, as we have been trying to shed light on not certifying any people, because it could be that you, in that same situation, would find yourself also addicted to a certain substance or situation. And we also talked a bit about behavioral addictions, which many people are suffering from at the moment, and we don't quite realize our addictions because they're innocuous things like social media, video games, shopping, gambling. Gambling, well, is not quite so innocuous, but it's not the kind of addiction that we talk about quite as much as we do an addiction to drugs or even smoking or alcohol. We are going to take our break just now, inshallah, and I hope that you join me for the second segment of Vortex of Truth for today. I am Nima Jarabi, and JazakAllah khair for all our listening.